There you go.
All right, good afternoon. I hope you had a good lunch break. So to make your afternoon better and wonderful, I will give you a little bit information and some useful tips about the DNA, its basic properties, structure, and we'll talk about some tools and techniques which would be helpful to predict the melting temperature of those DNAs. Okay. So, okay, so as we all know, I guess you all know that very well, that DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid, and it's actually polymer of deoxyribonucleic acids, and it is found in chromosomes, mitochondria, chloroplasts, everywhere. And if you will look in all your body, starting from your top to toe, it's everywhere there is a DNA. So DNA is basically, some scientists say, is being used to transfer the information from generation to generation. It carries the functional information, structural information, means all kind of genetic information from father or from father to offspring. Okay, and so DNA has a huge importance in our life. Means my lab doesn't work too much with DNA, but because we work on the protein, and protein comes from the DNA, right? Means DNA is one of the basic building blocks which goes through transcription and translation to the protein. So that's why the knowledge and the information about the DNA is very important in our lab. Okay, so DNA, the building block of DNA means, if I say a basic subunit is the nucleic acid, right? So nucleic acid here is the nucleic acid base, right? And it is making a bond which is called glycosidic bond with a pentose sugar ribose, right? And this is the phosphate. So if you are not familiar with the nomenclature, so this nucleic acid, when combines with the pentose sugar ribose, this thing called a nucleoside, which combines a sugar plus base. And when it forms a bond or makes a complex with this phosphate, it makes a nucleotide. So nucleotide is the whole unit, which is nucleoside plus phosphate, and nucleoside is the sugar plus base. So right, so if you will see what in all the nucleotides, all the basic subunits of a DNA, only this thing, which is nucleic acid base, will change. Okay, and there are not many, but only five kinds. And out of those five, two are called as purine, and other three are called as pyrimidine. So purine, which is having adenine and guanine, and pyrimidine is cytosine, uracil, and thymine. So if you look into the structure, there are not much difference. So actually, you don't need to memorize these structures. If you will look, only they are differed by some subunit on the side or on the branches, right in here. And similarly goes in for the pyrimidine. Okay. So when DNA, which is deoxyribonucleic acid, if you want to differentiate, okay, here is a little bit more description of the name of the nomenclature. So here is the nucleic acid polymer, and when nucleotide, what the nucleotide is called and what the nucleoside is called. So this table can help you the name of the nucleosides and nucleotides on the basis of their nucleic acid bases. So you can say when adenine is there, adenosine is the nucleoside and nucleotide adenylate. Okay, that goes for guanine, thymine, and uracil. All right. So, like protein, if you remember from Eileen's talk, protein has a peptide, right? It has a peptide backbone. Okay. The similar, it's not means not the way chemically, but there is DNA and RNA. They also have a backbone, and that backbone is made of sugar and phosphate, right? So here. If I see a direction and this backbone always goes from 5' to 3'. So you see here is a phosphate, which is attached to the 5' linker in here and goes to the 3' linker. Then again, another phosphate is attached here and that goes so on. So that's how a phosphate sugar backbone forms into the DNA. Okay? Right. So, So both DNA and RNA have almost, they have similar except one thing, okay? So in RNA we don't have thymine, but uracil is being replaced by thymine. So if I give you a sequence like AT, like this one in here, you can easily say, okay, this looks like a DNA. If T I replace with U, it means it's a RNA, right? So that's the basic difference by looking into the nucleotide sequence. You can say whether it's RNA or DNA, okay? So they both are polymer, and we know they are made of these new nucleotides, so chain off, and these building blocks are arranged on the side of the backbone. Right? And direction this 5' to 3', if you remember from the protein has directionality goes from N-terminal to C-terminal, right? There is an N-terminal, and there is a C-terminal from the carboxyl, because of carboxylic acid. So they have a direction from 5' to 3'. That's how we read a DNA sequence. So why it's called 5', because there is a carbon, there's a phosphate which attaches at the 5' position, this phosphate group, and the second phosphate group attached to the 3'. All right? So that's how it goes on, 5' to 3' direction. All right. In RNA also, we read the same directionality, the same from 5' to 3'. We read the sequence of a nucleotide in an RNA. Or the DNA. All right. So here is a, because DNA also exists as a single strand sometimes, but most of the time it's a double stranded. Okay. And double stranded means two single strand comes together, makes the hydrogen bonds with each other, and makes a complex tertiary structure or secondary structure. Okay, and here is the RNA. So in these two, means what if you know little bit about RNA is always most reactive, means it's too much reactive in comparison to the DNA, right? Why? Because in the DNA most of the time is a double helix in the format, so as the grooves are hidden from the reaction, or they are closed for most of the enzyme group is means this part is free. That makes RNA more reactive than the DNA. So that's why RNA is very much prone for the enzyme attack, right? That's what it makes RNA a more catalytic in comparison to the DNA. So this is the Watson-Crick helix base pair, where adenine always makes two hydrogen bond with the thymine, and guanine always makes three hydrogen bonds with the cytosine here. And that's how a double helix deep DNA being formed. We have two bond between A and T and G and C. So always remember, A always binds with T and G always binds with C. That is true. So if I write a sequence of a single-stranded DNA, right? So you can easily guess what the complementary DNA sequence for that single strand, right? Because you know A always bind with T, G always bind with C, okay? So probably next page should have an example of this. And same true for RNA. A pairs with uracil because RNA doesn't have T, right? G pairs with C. So if if I give you this sequence, A, U, C, C, G, C, C, T, T, right? This has uracil and thymine both, but this is just for an example. So I want to write a complementary sequence for this. A should have T, U should have A, C, G, G, C, G, G, A, A, right? Very easy, okay? Any question on that, this one? All right, so, and because of the RNA, I mean, being reactive, it can hybridize with the DNA also and form a mixed strand. So in when you will go to your senior year or your final year of your graduation, probably in your undergrad, you will see some structure if you stay into the biochemistry or biophysics. You will see RNA can bind with the DNA and make a hybridized structure too. So, and for this, because this sequence was too small, right? I can easily guess, I can predict the complementary sequence. But sometimes when you have a huge, like 100 or 50, base pairs in here. Then how would you find the complementary? Means you can sit and do one by one manually, but there are many software available. So I will talk about those one and I will show you how those software can easily find out the complementary base pair for this single strand of DNA. Okay, so that was the basic information about the DNA, or basic introduction about the DNA. But like protein, right? They have a primary, secondary, tertiary, and all kind of structure. And that structure gives is generated because of the hydrogen bond and the torsion angle the backbone creates, right? So in protein, they have a peptide backbone, right? So all the torsion angle because of the that movement or the twist of that torsion angle. But in here, because we have these five nucleic acid, they all have a ring structure, right? They all have a ring, okay? And because of these ring, they're a structure is more complicated. Why? Because there is, if we look into this torsion angle figure where they have, if there is a rotating point in here, if the angle is being rotating around this one, is alpha, beta, this gamma, delta, and this, if you look into this ring, this five carbon ring because of the ribose sugar. Yeah. Okay, yeah, because of the ribose sugar, I'm sorry, I said nucleic acid. So that ribose sugar in here, that has five bonds in here and each five bond have a different kind of torsion angle. Okay, so if I guess it's, yeah, these new one, new two, new three, new four, new five, and then epsilon, chi, right? So there are so many options for the rotation or the torsion angle in here. So that's why this structure becomes more complex. People are trying to study means by they tried to study actually for a long time. The study is being going on where they assume that this top part are these three into the same plane, and then they try to make to study these other rotation or torsion angle by keeping these few first three or these three carbon atom onto the same. But still, there are many more options in here that makes the structure of a DNA too complex. So, if I talk about the primary structure of a nucleic acid or of a DNA, right? The primary structure is similar as protein, where we write the nucleotides in a single row, right? A, G, T, T, C, A, C, 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 right? This is the primary. Means if you remember from the protein structure, protein primary, we wrote the 20 out of 20 amino acids in a sequence, right? In a single strand format, okay? And similar goes for the RNA. So this is the simplest primary structure where you write all these nucleotides into the same row, one after one from 5' to 3' direction. So secondary structure again, sometime when DNA, a single strand of the DNA folds and goes and make bonds with the rest of the sequence, right? These hydrogen bonds with the rest of the sequence, and this part folds back. So it is making the hydrogen bond with itself, right? And creating this secondary structure of the DNA. So here it's a hairpin loop formation where these can pair with each other, but these part cannot. So this gives, this leads to the formation of hairpin. So that's how even in the RNA secondary structure, the pair, the nucleotides which can pair with each other, they will form the hydrogen bond, but which cannot, they will form this pseudo knot or junction kind of, or this hairpin loop. And to work with these DNA sequence or the RNA sequence, it is very important to know about these kinds of secondary structure formation. Because if you want to study the interaction, if you are into the biochemistry or biophysics group, you would like to study the interactions of these part with the either other DNA or other protein, or how they behave into the different solution. So it's very important to know how the secondary structure should be into the solution form when you have these nucleic acid sequence into the single strand DNA formation. And there are many tools available online which can give you a prediction of, not the exact one, but can give you a prediction of secondary structure, the best possible prediction for the secondary structure. If we will have, if we will left with the time, I will show you one tool that how that predicts the secondary structure of a DNA sequence. So tertiary structure, this is how two strands folds to each other, and they make a tertiary structure. So there are three forms of DNA, A form, B form, Z form. Out of these three forms, B form is the most common.
Right.
B form is the one which is a right-handed helix, right, which forms the the Watson-Crick base pairs. Okay. And these two forms are not very common here. Into the in this A form, This is mostly said when there is a dehydration. In case, in that case, these kinds of form, a form into the DNA is being found. But this is the form which is normally found in everywhere. Okay, and because you see these loop, they are most stretched. Means in here, but in here they are a little bit compressed. So that's why this DNA is more reactive and being in comparison to these two ones. That's why for the enzymatic reaction and for the other purposes, probably that's why the Mother Nature chose this structure of the DNA. Okay, so if we look from the tertiary structure of the A form, B form, and Z form DNA, you will see the variation into the torsion angle present into those tertiary form of the DNA. So here is the sequence, and on the basis of that, the torsion angle has been calculated. So you see this is a lots of variation involved from A to B to Z DNA form. Okay, so as we know, all the enzymes, most means all the enzymes are protein. So it means protein, most of the time, all the catapult, all the catalytic activities, protein is being used, right? They are the means they can activate the reaction, they can work as a catalyst. But this enzyme, which is ribozyme, it is an RNA with some protein bound in it. So this is, see the complex structure, it looks like a butterfly, but is this complex tertiary structure, tertiary and quaternary structure of RNA, which is bound with the protein, this can also work as a catalyst. So it means DNA has a versatile role in from transferring the genetic information from one generation to other. It can be also used as a catalyst, right? I mean, this RNA in here. So means there is a significant amount of protein in here. So, but it's still, it's a main the RNA, this quaternary structure, and that can be used as a catalyst too. So means as I told you that DNA could have the very diverse effects. So that's why they are very important to study in the all form of science. So that's, now we are on our first part of think and discussion question. Probably I will not take much time. If anyone want to say a few words there about the, what are the major differences between DNA and protein structure. I can see lots of similarities between DNA and protein structure. Can anyone?
They're both polymers.
Yes, yes, both are polymers. Okay, and if you see that DNA is made of only four, right? Four new nucleotides. A, T, G, C, right? Is the combination of these only four nucleotides. And protein, they have 20 kinds of amino acids. It's a combination of 20 amino acids, right? That's one of the major differences between protein and DNA. Okay, similarities, if you see, they have similarities into the structure formation, primary, secondary, tertiary, and all kind of structure. They both kind of either amino acids or the nucleic acid, they both have the same. All right, okay, so now on to our next part, a little review of intro biology, right? Because we talked about the DNA, but we should know where this DNA is coming from, where means how this DNA is found. I told you that you can, any part of our body can give you DNA, even my hair, my saliva, anything can give this here. So if you are a fan of crime TV series, you will see if they found a drop of blood, if they found the hair, if they found saliva, they can get the DNA of that criminal. Okay. So here is a descriptive picture of a eukaryotic animal cell, right? There are many organelles in here. There is a nucleus where the DNA is being stored. There's a mitochondria, and mitochondria is also having the DNA. There are some membrane-bound organelles. So there is an interesting fact about the mitochondrial DNA. You know, the mitochondrial DNA is the only DNA which is transferred from, which is only transferred from mother to daughter. So if you want to find out who is the mother of that girl, you can, means scientists can use this mitochondria. Means that's the only DNA which is being transferred from mother to daughter.
But this time, it's also transferring the son, not only the daughter?
Only to daughter.
Not the son.
Not the son. Right, so there are ribosomes, peroxisomes, cytosol, and Golgi body. There are many kinds of organelles in here. But
let's think about that. It's maternal here.
About what?
About your statement.
Yes, it's true. It's
so where's the mitochondrial DNA coming from for son? Because we do have mitochondria.
Yeah, so that's I'm not saying that father DNA is not going. Means that's the specific DNA which goes from mother to daughter. I mean, there are other DNA also comes, but that's the specific part of the DNA which goes from mother to daughter only, not to son. I mean, there are other DNA which will go to son.
It goes to the son too. So the sons inherit the mother's mitochondria without additional DNA contributions from the father.
So it's an X-linked chromosome.
Well, it's just the egg is the one that has the mitochondria.
Yeah, it's not even, it's somebody says maternal inheritance. So basically, it only comes from your mother, but if you have a daughter or if you have a son, the mitochondria are coming from your mother. Right? Because the mitochondria are in the egg cells.
Okay, so you are...
So if that egg is fertilized by a Y sperm, it's going to become a male, and then it's fertilized by an X sperm, it's going to become a female. But the autosomal inheritance takes chromosomes from both the mother and father, but the mitochondria are just coming from the father.
Okay, so, all right, little change, mitochondria, but, yeah, but, okay, I guess I need to review that article again.
I want to follow up. I mentioned about mitochondrial DNA because in DNA barcoding, I know it's being done, it's popular, but they're using mitochondrial DNA. Why not more plus DNA? Why not to know nuclear? They're using mitochondrial DNA.
Who using mitochondrial DNA?
DNA barcoding. Okay.
All right. Okay, so next is your prokaryotic cell, which is actually a simple picture of a bacterial cell, right? So bacterial cell, if you see the one difference in this cell wall, and there is no nucleus in here. This is just the coil, super coil DNA in here, into the plasmid form. So plasmid is the circular form of the DNA, right? There are other organelles too. The similarity one is the ribosomes in here, okay? But as you see, there is too much DNA inside this bacterial cell, right? And this, when the DNA is into the circular form, we call it the plasmid. Otherwise, when it is a long strand, it's always being used as DNA, okay? So why I'm showing this picture? Because that will lead us to the next part in our biochemistry lab, where we heavily use the E. coli for our gene expression and getting the DNA and doing the means, getting the protein out of it. All right. So here is a flagella which helps this cell to be motile or to float or mobile into the solution. Okay. So here's the ribosomes and the plasmid in here. It's means scientists now, they work on the both kinds of cell into the lab. They work on those eukaryotic cell also into the lab, but it's very difficult to work with them because you know, in ancient time when you means not too old time I'm talking about, maybe I'm talking about 80s or 70s, when they need any protein for the purification purpose or for any development of the antibiotics, they will go to the slaughterhouse, collect lots of pieces of meat or horse blood, come back to the lab and purify the protein. That looks gross to me. So that's why scientists developed this technique that they can express the desired gene into the bacterial cell and collect that particular protein from this one, right? So in that way, you will only kill bacteria, not the animal. All right, so if you look into the first picture, this looks a pretty simple picture, right? There is only DNA, ribosomes, and few dots, but this is not the reality. So reality is this. So Mr. Godsell, he drew a picture on the basis of various literature and some experiment. He drew this picture where he shows that how a bacterial cell actually looks. So it doesn't look that everyone is comfortable over there. They are actually, but to me it doesn't look, right? It is too much crowd in here, right? DNA, ribosomes, and here are other proteins. They all are coiled up and filled into a small area, right? So, when we work in the laboratory, we cannot work directly inside the cell, right? It's very difficult. So sometimes we think when we work on this DNA, on this protein in our lab, are we giving the same, are we keeping the environmental condition same as they were in the lab? So I'm a protein scientist, I think yes. Because it doesn't look same because we prepare a solution, aqueous solution, and put our protein in there. There is only some salts and one protein. But in here you see it is full of lots of things in here. So there is a long debate which is still carrying on between the scientists, whether the in vitro work is similar, giving the similar kinds of result as it should give in vivo, right? So we will not go into that debate, but that was for your information that how we work in the lab, but what the actual condition inside the cell, right? So that's how, when we have a cell, right, we grow that, we grow our protein inside that cell, and we can easily break these cells and collect the DNA or the protein in our, I mean, our desired protein or the DNA from those cells, right? It's easy to grow into the cell. Means when you compare then collecting a blood from a horse or an elephant or from a dinosaur. Okay, so how this happened, because we, the cell has DNA, and how that DNA is being converted to the protein, right? So this conversion from DNA to protein is called, this system is called the central dogma. So we reported as the central dogma, where DNA is being converted to the RNA, then RNA converted to the protein. So that's how the first process is called the transcription, and second process is the translation, right? So when, suppose, I want to collect the a gene which inhibit a particular antibiotic, right? So what I will do, I will induce that gene inside the bacteria, okay? And that will produce the desired protein, and then I will collect that protein by rupturing their cell wall, okay? So, but this process involves, when it goes from DNA to RNA, involves these two processes. So here, in the first part, transcription, where DNA is being converted to messenger RNA. So messenger RNA works as a messenger. It carries the message from DNA, it reads the DNA codon or DNA sequence and carries that message to the system. When this messenger RNA comes here, transfer RNA carries the message with the help of ribosomes, and that transfer RNA carries this gives this message and convert those codons into the protein. So that the whole system is the central dogma, right? So just take an overall view, DNA to messenger RNA, then messenger to protein. That's how a DNA sequence reads or make a protein, all right? So these DNA, if this DNA sequence, you see, there is a three-letter code. So this three-letter code is called codon, okay? This three-letter code is being read as one amino acid. So people have done too much hard work making a table which codes these three-letter nucleic acid into one amino acid. And here is the table. If you see, there is a three-letter code for most for all of these amino acids. So UUUUUC, UUAAG for the phenylalanine, then leucine, isoleucine, methionine, valine, and here is the code for the stop codon too, which tells to the genetic system, okay, now it's time to stop. You made enough protein, or you made the right protein, now it's time to stop, okay? So these codes, so you don't need to remember it. Most of the time this table is available online. You can do, if you have a small sequence, you can do it by yourself. But there are many online tools available which will make the things very easy for you. You just put the DNA sequence in there and it will translate into the amino acid sequence. So that sequence will tell you that what kind of protein you are, what the sequence of the protein which you will get after your translation or after the cell will complete its process. All right, so here is a DNA sequence, right? A, C, T, T, A, G, G, and T, A. So when cell or that translation process starts reading, it can make actually three reading frame in here. There are actually six reading frame when you will do, when you will use online tool and you will put this TNA sequence in that web page, you will get six frame. And how? Because three frame it reads from the, all right. So out of that, you need to select that which frame, which reading frame is giving you your desired protein. So now you can say why only three? It could be four also, but if you see, it start from first reading frame, start from here, A, C, T, makes a T, right? T, A, C makes a Y. So if I start from C, we'll go to this. Start from T, it will make this sequence. But when I will start from this one, it will again start the same sequence of the amino acid, right? So that's why only three reading frames are there, okay? Because other will give the same protein sequence. All right. So if there is a small DNA sequence, you can do it by yourself. Okay, doing means looking into the that codon table, code table, and you can convert or translate these DNA triplet code into one amino acid. But when you have a big sequence, you need some help. So for that, we have lots of biological tools. I will show you at the we'll have, if we will have enough time, I will show you how to do that. It's very easy, not so complicated. So that's the question. Is I already discussed about that whether we are giving the same conditions when we work on a. We have a protein or DNA in a aqueous solution, which we prepare in the lab, or when we work inside the cell. So there is a huge discussion in that, but when we work, because we work actually into the aqueous solution, we assume, okay, we are giving the enough similar condition when we work with the aqueous solution. So we are considering this point that we are giving the same condition as, means not very much similar, but approximately similar condition to the aqueous solution. That's what we think when we work with protein or the DNA. So I would say when you go back to your room, still think about other points of these two differences when you work with the aqueous solution or the inside the cell. Okay, so working in a biochemistry research lab involves lots of factor and lots of thinking and lots of reading too. So before you go for experiment, we always design a process or procedure that how we proceed. So if we are going to get a protein, right? So first thing is if you can get that protein, you go and if this protein is from a human or it's from some animal, you can go and collect that protein directly from the animal, right? But if that protein is not easily available, right? So what you do, you will express that gene which can produce that desired protein, right? So you choose a system. If you can purify it from the source, you do experiment and purify it. Okay, this looks very easy, but it's not that easy because this purification and this process takes days and hours, okay? But when you cannot purify it from the source, what you do, you design that gene, you express that gene. Before that, you determine that DNA sequence, express that sequence into the bacteria. If that was giving, if that was a good expression, that's okay, you purify your protein. If that was not, you go and do another expression, another sequence. And so that's how, so if, so in the laboratory, we try to make this time as small as possible so that we can get this purified protein as quickly as possible. Okay? But in reality, it never happens. It takes days and months to get a right expression for a particular protein. Okay, so when you have a bacteria and you know about the protein that, okay, this is the protein I want, you express that protein into the bacteria. You try to induce that protein into the bacteria. So when you have that desired protein, you get a sequence, DNA sequence from that protein. And you want to express that sequence in here. So there are, in a plasmid, because plasmid is circular, right? There are two strands bound together, right? It's a double circle. There's a outer ring and one inner ring. Two circles in there, right? So if we open that one, right, it normally opens at the origin of replication. So when it opens, there are actually two origins of replication, right? There were two strands in a plasmid. When it opens, there are two origins of replication, and with the help of that polymerase, these two circles, two plasmid, generates from one, right? When we put our desired sequence, after that, with the replication process, we get two sequences. So that's how we put our desired DNA sequence into this plasmid. Okay, when we have these desired sequenced plasmid, we can do we can amplify them by using PCR, or we can get the more circular plasmid with the help of PCR, and that plasmid we can insert again into the cell, and those cells will produce our desired protein. Because it's not a few minutes process which I can explain you very easily. It takes days and days to do this replication process and then expressing the protein on top of it. Okay. So, but this is a simple representation that how those two strands separate from each other, and at the origin of replication, the replication is starting from one plasmid, you get two plasmid. That's how it copies the desired sequence. Okay, so that covers the first part of our DNA structure and its characteristic and properties, where we covered the DNA structure and compared that how it is similar to the protein or how it is different from the protein. And we talked about how DNA can also catalyze the chemical reaction, if you remember the ribosome, right? Bacterial and animal cell, they look similar, but their morphology is a little bit different. So they process and they store DNA into the different form. If you remember, in animal cell, there was a nucleus where the DNA was stored, but in bacterial cell, there was no nucleus. But the DNA code is same for bacterial and animal cell. So now the code, remember, there are those A, U, T, C, the three-letter code is same for both. Okay, so, and in the last part we talked about, we can express our desired protein with the help of these bacterial cells. Okay, so next part, to how to measure when we have DNA in our solution, how we will measure the DNA concentration, right? How we'll find out how much DNA we have in our solution. So DNA concentration, most of the time we represent in the form of microgram per milliliter, okay? Or the equivalent of nanogram per microliter. So if I say I have 100 microgram per milliliter of DNA, which would be similar to 100 nanogram per microliter of DNA, can you guess why 100 microgram per ml is similar to 100 nanogram per microliter?
They're just a ratio.
Just the ratio, right? The ratio is the same because microgram has 1,000 nanogram and milliliter has 1,000 microliter, right? So that's how it keeps the ratio same. Okay? So when we, to get the extinction coefficient, if you remember the Beer's law, right? Is the absorbance equal to concentration, path length, times the extinction coefficient. So from there, when we calculate a double standard DNA or a plasmid DNA, we use a extinction coefficient for that DNA 0.02 microgram per ml per centimeter, per centimeter, all right? So that's the extinction coefficient we use to calculate the concentration of the DNA. And at 260, we calculate that extinction coefficient at 260 nanometer, all right? So at 260 nanometer, here the graph which shows that how the intensity or absorbance is increasing as the concentration of DNA is increasing, right? So in the lab, whenever you measure DNA concentration, you use 260 nanometer absorbance at 260 nanometer and extinction coefficient of 0.02. So DNA, we measure at extinction coefficient 0.02, and for the protein, so this extinction coefficient, because this extinction coefficient depends on the sequence also, all right, what the sequence and number was, the length also, and some other factors. So for the protein, here I have shown a protein's extinction coefficient for GB3 protein. So it's the third immunoglobulin binding protein G. Here is the, so if I have a 10 microgram concentration, 10 microgram per ml concentration of DNA and 10 microgram per ml concentration of protein, right? So if you calculate using these two extinction coefficient, you will see this will show a higher absorbance than this one, right? So that leads to our next question, which is more sensitive. So with this, with the same concentration, we are getting higher absorbance, and with this, with the same concentration, we are getting low absorbance. So it means this DNA is more sensitive, right? Here, because we get absorbent because of the aldol ring of tryptophan and some of tyrosine, but in here, there are all the rings, and absorbance is the combined effort of all nucleotides, okay? So it means DNA is more sensitive, which is actually very helpful when we collect protein, right? Because if there are any contamination of DNA, or if there are any leftover DNA in our protein solution, okay? So our process will show that there is a leftover DNA. So you need to, for your process, you need to purify it more. So means that is, this difference is very useful when you do protein chemistry or you work with the protein and the DNA sequence, right? So with this, a little bit more information about when we have single-stranded RNA. It is a little bit more than the double-stranded or the plasmid, 0.025, and for the single-stranded dDNA. And this increase into the extinction coefficient could be because of those, there is no, it is, it's most of the, called, means those, all the nucleotides are open. It's, so that's why probably they are not binding with the other strand. So they are, means it's called chromophobicity. Because of that, they, there is an increase into the extinction coefficient. But we don't need to think more about that. You can just use this number to calculate the concentration of a single-stranded DNA. So when we work with a highly sensitive system where we need less DNA, or we need more DNA and less protein, with the use of these extinction coefficient, and if we have a ratio which is up to 1.8 to 2.2 between DNA and protein, this system is totally workable. You can use this if your DNA is 2 times or 1.8 times higher than the protein present into the solution. That's the approximately similar thing works when we work with protein. If DNA is, if protein concentration is 1.5 times the DNA concentration, it is workable. Okay, but it depends on the what kind of procedure or what kind of process you are going to use to do to study the structure or the binding information. Okay, so here we are on our first biological tool or online tool, which will give you the information about the extinction coefficient, right? So I told you that extinction coefficient varies if DNA is long, if the sequence is being changed, right? So in this one, this is called integrated DNA technology, right? Where you can put your DNA sequence in here, any sequence if you have a desired sequence or you want to check the extinction coefficient for you. You put your DNA sequence in here and you can get the extinction coefficient. Okay, there are many others. If you have a double duplex DNA double strand, you just need to write the single stranded and it will read the complementary sequence by itself. Just you have to click in here, select duplex DNA. This Cavalluzzi border correction, I don't know much about this one, but it is being selected. It said that select this all the time because this do some correction. Even though if you will not select, it will not do much changes into the extinction coefficient. It will just change by 4 to 6%. So I don't know if they said this needs to be selected, why they did not put it as a default selection, but they say so, check it. When you checkpoint and put your and calculate, you will get the whole lot information, melting point, extinction coefficient. So if you wanna have a look, okay, here, I will put few. All right, selected the single-stranded DNA, all right, and apply Cavalluzzi-Borer correction, calculate. So you see a very fine spectrum, which is telling the extinction coefficient at 260, right? Here is the table. You can scroll down and look the extinction coefficient in here for this. right? It's very easy. Just you, if you know your nucleotide sequence, you can just put and collect the information from there. All right, so that's the first part. Then I told you that you can get the reverse complement sequence and reverse complement sequence too. So this website gives you the reverse complementary sequence. What you do, you need to put your single standard sequence, right? For which you want to find out the reverse complement sequence. You just put this sequence, hit submit, and you will get the reverse complement. Reverse complement means complementary sequence reversed. Okay? So this, because this thing, you might think, what the need of this website, but this is small sequence. When you have a huge one, you will cry to do it manually. So it's better to have this website. You can get it just quickly with the blink of your eyes. You will get your reverse complement sequence. All right. So I guess all these websites are mentioned in your PowerPoint slide. You can go home and practice more about these. There is one more tool which I told you, which can translate your DNA sequence into the protein, into the amino acid sequence. All right, so this translation tool will read all the six frames. Right, here it is. I will type a query, just any sequence. I don't know what is this output format means, verbose, so I let it stay whatever it is. Genetic code will keep standard and translate sequence. Right, so you see it gave you six reading frame. So if you know your protein sequence, right? If you see your first frame, if your first frame matches with your protein sequence, you can choose that one and use it for the further analysis. Suppose you were designing a primer or you are into the cloning, so you can use that one. But there is a one thing, you see this red part. That red part shows, okay, if there is a methionine, right? So means methionine, that could be a origin for replication. That could be the place where the replication or this translation process can start. So that red part shows the methionine, which can show where your replication has started, where that translation will tell. And there should be, it's not showing any stop codon, but sometime when those three-letter code reads a stop codon, right? If you remember from the code table, there was a three-letter code for a stop codon also, which tells, okay, this is the place where you need to stop, okay? No further translation. All right? So these tools are very helpful and makes your life very simple when you work in a biochemistry lab, in biology lab too. So if you are a biologist, excuse me, because I am a biochemist, so I always talk about the bio. Okay, so that's what we can get from that this Expose. And if you will open this Expose, web.expose.org, you will find many process or operation in there. You can do translation, you can do back translation, where you can convert a protein into the DNA sequence, possible DNA sequence. You can do BLAST, where you can search if you have a sequence and you want to find out if this sequence matches, means suppose you have a human gene, right? And you want to see if the similar gene sequence is found in orangutan or monkey or in a cow or where, you can put that search on that blast and it will look for the, all the similar possible sequence in there, okay? So, but we'll not talk about that thing because we don't have enough time. So I will try to cover the things which I thought that I will cover today, okay? So these gene sequences are these DNA and protein sequence, right? Amino acid sequence. These information can be collected from means many websites, but there are two websites which I am telling where you can get the DNA sequences from Entrace and from the PDB. So if you know the name of your gene or if you know the name of the protein, you can look for it, and these two websites will give you sometime this PDB even means most of the time if that protein has been already studied and a structure being developed, you can see the structure into the 3D format with the help in this PDB. But PDB stands for protein data bank, but it's not it's not only protein. Nowadays it has DNA structure and DNA information too. So you can get the structure of many genes, gene sequences in these two, okay? So if we will have more time, I will come back and show you how to find out the gene sequence, the desired gene sequence on the Entrace and PDB. But right now we'll move forward to finish the things which I want to talk. So there is one more tool which is a biology workbench. And I think it's very important for the biology and biochemistry work. Why? Because you can, if you have a sequence and you want to do the mutation, you want to do modify a safe sequence at one place, right? You want to insert a mutation, okay? And you tried that mutation that didn't work, then you want to insert another mutation and do the experiment again, it didn't work. So suppose you have 10, 15 mutation in your planning, that in your experiment plan, right? So it would be very difficult to keep a track that whether the changes I am making is only at one place or I am disturbing the whole protein. So there are many tools, there are many applications into this biology workbench which tells, which can do the alignment, which can compare, convert your, means alignment is where it can compare two DNA sequence and tell you whether they are same or different, right? Okay, two protein sequences, it can compare and tell you whether they are same or different. It can do the blast, it can, means it can look for the similar protein sequences or similar DNA sequences available online on the whole world, right? So any sequence you put and search into the blast, it will search for all the possible similar sequence. And it will tell you how much similarity they have, right? So it will, sequence by sequence or residue by residue, it will compare all the sequence with you. So when you do mutation or you study a same protein with a little variation in that protein, this tool is very important. You can store all your DNA sequences in there and you can keep comparing by alignment tool whether you are going, you are just making one changes or you are disturbing the whole thing. So this is available for free. Just you need to log in. You need to make a login ID for that. And it's not a spam, so don't worry, okay? So you can go create a login ID and use all the tools available on this website. So of course, means these, all the tools are very helpful when you work in a lab, because whether it's a translation, whether it's a mutation, or whether it is a generating a creating a primer, means all these tools are very helpful. As far as means, I think, I don't know what you think, but if you are working in a biochemistry lab, you can say the same, right? These all tools are very helpful. They can means they can convert a whole day job or whole day reading into the library just into 1 minute, right? You just put the things and it will give you the answer right there. So there are tools also which predict the secondary structure of the protein. But before that, I will talk a little bit about DNA melting. So melting, when this melting word comes in mind, we think like ice melting. So it's not something like ice melting. It is means like denaturation, okay? Is it two double helix or two standing together by hydrogen bonds, okay? Maybe some tertiary structure or quaternary structure too. So when you apply heat, those two strand, those hydrogen bond breaks and they becomes like a single strand. Okay. So in DNA melting, if you think in terms of Le Chatelier principle, right? So if we add heat, which side do you think will favor? Right? I know you all know. So this left side, right? Where it will separate the those strand. So that's the separation. So that's how when we calculate the melting point, we calculate a melting point at the position where 50% of the DNA helix is into the single-stranded form, right? So if, I don't know if I put that graph in here. So it's like a two-stage, if I draw like a melting, okay, with the temperature, or what is on this side. So this point, at the middle point of this slope will be the melting temperature of this this strand. Okay? So that's what I told, that what will happen when you will heat it, secondary and tertiary structure will get lost and primary will maintain. Because primary structure is not very easy to break. You need some kind of enzyme to break that primary structure. Okay? And so now, the next question comes, what will affect the melting temperature, right? The melting temperature, if you think that if our sequence is short, it will be a lower melting temperature. It's big, need higher. And one more thing is the GC content, right? A and T makes two hydrogen bonds. And G and C makes three hydrogen bonds, right? So if there are more GC content, it means there are more number of bonds. So that will be, means that oligomer or DNA sequence will have higher melting temperature. So here is a, means in old time when these techniques and tools were not available, there was a general rule where they set a 4 degree Celsius temperature for AT bond and 6 degree Celsius temperature for GC bond, and that's how they used to calculate the melting temperature. So if more GC bond, this temperature means right now this 75 will increase or decrease these GC bond according to this calculation. this number will go down, right? And this thing you can see by use of this integrated DNA technology web page. If we put more GC on that one, if we increase the GC content of our nucleotides, we will see a higher melting point for that. Okay? So there are various factors, as I told, the length and the GC content, and the salt also. Salt, why? Because DNA there's a phosphate, right? Phosphate has charge. So when there is a divalent cation like magnesium, it can bind with that phosphate and attach with another phosphate and make it more rigid. Means make it a little bit more stronger for the temperature. So that's how salt concentration also one of the factor for the melting temperature calculation. Okay, so let's go. I think it's important to see. Let's go in here and see if we can do that. Right, so when we go for the DNA thermodynamics and hybridization, it asks for the salt concentration in here. So it means if you vary these salt concentration, it will change the melting point and melting point of that. So I will type a simple sequence. Add the mismatch and dangling. Yes.
So is the salt concentration just the concentration of the buffer that you put the DNA in?
Yes, so there is a, you put the buffer in there, and you put some metallic cations, right? Divalent cations in there. So it depends on that concentration too. So if I put any sequence in here and I will hit analyze, I will not change this one, hit analyze, we'll see it is telling you the melting temperature in here, 57.6, right? If I will change these concentration, it will change the melting point of those means that particular sequence. If I will change the GC content, it will change that melting temperature of this oligomer. Okay, so these all websites are very useful because this website, this IDT analyzer, it gives you the melting temperature, extinction coefficient, and percent GC content also. So it can calculate all three things. Okay, there is one more website I want to tell you. It's just that predicts the secondary structure of RNA and DNA, right? And it means if you want to store the information, you can make a login in there, but still, without login, you can also work on that website. As we don't have much time, so I will not spend much time on this one. But this website is also very simple. Use any RNA or any DNA sequence. Put it on in their mFold, which is mFold web server. Look for the mFold on that website and put your DNA sequence. And that sequence will tell you the predicted secondary structure for that DNA or RNA. Because these things are important when you study the interaction like binding, or when you study the structure of any DNA or RNA. So this was one of the example for this, why this secondary structure information is important. Because HIV, we know that HIV wants to multiply again and again so that it can infect cell, more cells, right? So it, when there is a, because it doesn't have messenger, much messenger RNA to do that, so that's why what it does, it combines with a protein called TAT, and which attracts the messenger RNA, and that's how it produces messenger RNA again and again, and so that it can make, I mean, that's how it can infect more cells, right? So this interaction of this RNA, this trans RNA with the protein, to if you want to understand this interaction, it's important to know the secondary structure, that where is hairpin loop, and what kind of means, if there is a pseudo knot, and means how this secondary structure is looking. So there is one more thing I will cover real quick, is the the site-directed mutagenesis. Because in cloning and in cloning or designing a primer, it's very important or in expressing your desired protein. So suppose you have a particular protein sequence, and you know that if you will change this nucleotides in here will give you your desired protein, right? Suppose you got any protein and you want to change, instead of alanine, you want to change it to glutamic acid, right? So it means you are changing only one amino acid. You need to do mutation for that one, right? So to do that mutation, we use PCR, and PCR needs primer, okay? So primer are the one which gives the information about the desired sequence to the plasmid and then to the cell, okay? So for this designing of primer, Agilent has made it very easy, right? If you know your desired protein and you know where you want to introduce this sequence. So I have this quick change primer design. They want you to log in. You can log in and create your login ID if you want to order primer. But if you don't want to order from them, you can just do the designing and order from somewhere else. That's what we do, because they are expensive. So so suppose I have any protein in here. I will type a sequence. I'm just typing some random CC sequence. All right, so here is a random sequence on this Agilent. Upload now. When I will click upload now, it will upload and it will read all the nucleic acid or all the nucleotides by numbers, right? So you will see this table which will read number by number all the nucleotides, right? Then there is an option that which site you want to do the mutation, which site, which protein, or which amino acid you want to, whichever amino acid you want to change, according to that, you need to change that DNA sequence. And for that, if suppose I already know that at site one, I want to replace it with adenine. So I will choose, suppose I choose this site, 41, okay? this site where I want to change it to this C into A. Select here. And design primer. So here are your primers, right? You can do further evaluation by putting this primer into the that integrated DNA technology that will tell you the GC content, and that will tell you, even this one also tells you the what the melting temperature is, okay, but it doesn't tell the GC content. You can get the GC content from those other websites. So just take a print of this one or copy paste on the Word, MS Word, and send it to, they will send you this primer. So because these guys are they don't tell the particular kind of buffer or the concentration which they use for these primer, so that's why it's always better if you design the primer from them. It's better to buy from them because their designing process also includes the kind of salt concentration and the kind of temperature condition which they use. All right. All right, so that was, I think, one important thing. You can use these general approach also, right, that IDT biophysics to design the primer. You will put the sequence, you do the mismatch where you want to change the sequence, and you can get primer by using this one too. So as we are running out of time, I will summarize that we can, we learned, or we saw actually many computational tools for new nucleic acid, which can simplify, which can tell you about the secondary structure of that nucleotides of the DNA, and it can tell you the regularity of the Watson-Crick base pairing, and we can get the melting temperature, we can calculate the GC content, we can design the primer in order to do the mutation into our protein sequence. So many more things we can do. If I wish, if I had time, I could have told you much about means that biology workbench, but I think this brief introduction was enough for today. So if you have any question, don't hesitate to ask. All right, so in here there are... Yes?
Yeah, I'm not sure interested in the actual how to do the primer design. Yeah, I have time to work in that.
I'm going to let him because he's the one who does this.
Yeah, I was thinking, I hope we can have like real baby.
You want to bring yours DNA or protein sequence to do that?
I have this gene, like OSG, blah, blah, blah. I need to get that, the database. I have to put that here. Then I need a primer. I need to know what the DNA temperature.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a big deal. You bring your sequence, okay? And let me know where you want to do and what you want to change. I can help you to do that, okay? Any more questions? All right, well, thank you.
Okay, let's take 5 minutes.